terrible if I had a small fortune. If I were a rich man, I have a dibbity-dibbity-dibbity-dibbity-dibbity-dum. All day long I dibbity-dibbity-dum. If I were a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work hard. I have a dibbity-dibbity-dibbity-dibbity-dibbity-dum. If I were a bitty-bitty rich, idle-diddle-diddle-diddle man, I'd build a big tall house with the rooms by the dozen right in the middle of the town. A fine tin roof and a real wooden floors below. There would be one long staircase just going up and one even longer coming down. And one more leading nowhere just for show.
And welcome, everyone, to Your Money, Your Matters, and Blog Talk Radio. We certainly are glad that you are with us today. This is Rick Brady with Cornerstone Credit Union League and Todd Mark with Navicor Solutions, and we certainly are glad that you have joined us on this National Centenarian Day, celebrating those that have reached the age of 100 or over. And as we mentioned on the blog post this morning, that if you were born on this day in 1915, before the age of five, you experienced the sinking of the Lusitania, the Bolshevik Revolution, Albert Einstein's theory of relativity, the rise of the power of Vladimir Lenin, the re-election of Woodrow Wilson, and the end of World War One. So that kind of puts it into a picture of, you know, what 100 years is really like.
And, you know, the Cubs will have only gone 7 years without winning World Series in 1915. So it would seem pretty normal, actually.
I could totally understand.
And welcome, Tevye, from Fiddler on the Roof, one of my favorite all-time musicals.
Absolutely, yeah.
There you go. Mm-hmm. So a good Tuesday to you, Mr. Rick.
Hey, good day to you, too.
Yeah, you know, I was sitting around online, as I often do find myself doing on Tuesdays before coming to the show, and going through some of the emails that reminders of bills due, this and that.
Mm-hmm.
And I always enjoy logging in to see where my mortgage is, because I've been a homeowner since 1997. Of course, in Texas, only almost 8 years now. We moved here in December of 07. And since that time, I've also refinanced once, so it's hard to keep up with where you are in the mortgage. I know in general where I am, but I thought, you know, this is the it's statement time. Here's where your mortgage is. Oh, great, let me go in and look. And and it's fun because when you look at the prorating of payments, I'm now at that sweet spot where more is going toward principal than is
going
toward interest.
Isn't that nice? That's a great feeling.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because as we've shared with our listeners, I've recently gone through a divorce, but the house that we shared is still a shared asset, and I pay to make sure my kids can stay in the same school district.
Sure.
That. But from a financial standpoint, I don't look at it just to take care of my kids. I say every month, half of that principal is savings that's really going to me because we're gonna sell the house eventually, and it'll be 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm looking, it's like, all right, $825 is principal, and I thought, that's $412 that I'm putting into my own savings month after month, rather than thinking, oh, there's another mortgage payment or other support stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no. And it's really neat because you don't think of it as a savings like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is all people that are homeowners, you think about no greater path to asset building than being a homeowner. You've been a homeowner for how long?
Oh, my Lord. I bought my first home in 82, and I've been a homeowner ever since, either transferring from one house to another.
And how many houses has that been in the
That has been three.
Three homes, so 11 years per home.
Mm-hmm. Yep, then this one that I have now is the longest one that I've ever had, really.
Really?
I mean, it is now 22 years old this past May.
Wow.
So
the best house you've ever had, huh?
I think it is. You know, I think probably the big thing about it was is it was one that I built rather than one that I bought. The other two were ones that I bought. Although that's nice, buying a pre-existing home, you come with the pre-existing issues that might be in the home, the age of the home, obviously, and all, any of the appliances that come along with that, and typically the AC and the heater will come along with that. So you inherit some things. You inherit the plumbing, you'll inherit the electrical wiring, the fund, all that stuff. And this one I actually got to build, so I've aged with the house, and hopefully we both, you know, have aged with grace.
Nice.
But, you know, it has. I will say, for anybody that wants to buy a home, I think it's a very good investment. At the same time, I would also say that don't think that all you're going to do is sit on a couch and enjoy your house, because there's going to be – I have two lists at home, literally have two lists at home, my indoor projects and my outdoor projects. And when it's a nice day, I'm doing my outdoor projects. And when it's a bad day, like it's raining or something's going on, maybe it's you know, sleeting outside or something, I'm doing my indoor projects. So I have those two lists separated from each other, and there's always something to do. I can, you know, if I have nothing to do that day, I can always go and look at it and see this long list of stuff that I thought of.
So you've just dispelled one of the myths, one of the rumors that if you're single or if you're divorced, that there's no honey-do list. There's still a honey-do list.
It's my own honey-do.
Yeah. and you're in the awkward position of looking in the mirror and saying, yes, honey.
It's absolutely correct.
And then
you get to torture yourself. For example, one of the things that I've been wanting to do for a while, which takes some time to do, is that over the years, the trim in the house gets little nicks in it. You know, that can come from anything. The dog going in and out of the door, or you bumping the vacuum cleaner into the kickboard, or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
But you end up putting little nicks in it. Well, you want to sand it down and paint it. Well, it takes a lot of time to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at all of the trim in the house, around every door, around every floor, and I realize this is a really big project, and you have to do it fairly consistently. For example, if I'm going to do all the trim in the kitchen, and that's what I'm going to tackle that weekend, I need to do all of that, because you don't want to stop halfway through while you're painting a white trim, because when you start painting the second part of the white trim, it's a slightly different white.
I enjoyed reading in and seeing where my balance is.
Mm-hmm.
I say my balance with my ex, and we both have a nice growing asset. So that's something that reinforces savings. It reinforces as a positive goal. And I thought, here we are, and for those of you who were with us last week, you know, it's 100 days to Christmas, so now we're at 93 days. I heard the Today Show this morning said it's 93 days to Christmas. And I thought, they're listening to us on Your Money, Your Matters, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's also a great time as we start heading into the fourth quarter. And here we are. I can't believe we're, September 22nd already.
That's right.
Unbelievable. How
is
this year
today is the first day of fall or tomorrow?
In Texas, we have to wait another 6 weeks.
That's true.
I think the groundhog comes out and they say, you've got six more weeks of 90 to 100 degree weather.
Yep.
And then we'll bypass the fall colors and we'll go to dead brown.
We've been living with dead brown all summer. So.
There you go. But anyway, it's also a great time as you head into the fourth quarter to once again reevaluate where your finances, where you are with your goals, and it may be goals that you don't even think about because they're on automatic, kind of like me with the mortgage. I didn't say, you know, I have a goal that we're going to make all 12 of our mortgage payments on time this month, you know, or this year. You don't think about, well, I have a goal of getting my mortgage balance down. Unless you have a goal of prepaying and you're reducing it by extra. But it was just nice seeing that this is the year that we've crisscrossed post a refi, and we're still ridiculously high. We're still at 17% interest rate. That was a joke. Just want to make sure you're with me.
I'm staring.
Yeah.
Holding my breath, going, what?
Which credit union? I meant an American credit union.
Obviously wasn't. This obviously wasn't a credit union putting that.
No. It's funny. It's still, despite all of the pressures on the economy, we're still just slightly above. We're at 4 and 8.
Yeah.
And you know, you remember I refied and said you won't be able to beat this, and of course we dropped down into the mid threes. and it's the, oh gosh, if I timed it better, I'd have the perfect rate.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no timing a market, just like
nope.
there's no timing when's a good time to buy stocks.
Mm-hmm.
When you've got money to invest, because any time is a good time.
Yeah.
Rather than saying, but when are they going to do a split of their PE? Mm-hmm. When is there going to be a big announcement?
Mm-hmm.
When is the new iPhone?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
anyway, there's no timing a refi, even though we were certain we were near record level lows. And we were, but they went lower.
Yep.
So we still talk about people getting interest
mm-hmm.
rates in the threes.
Mm-hmm.
It's still not enough to justify me refinancing a second time
yeah.
in a matter of years.
And I think, you know, there's a lot of things that happen near the end of the year. I mean, obviously we have the holidays, and we've talked about the holidays
yep.
and saving for the holidays. We'll continue to do that all the way through the holidays, by the way. But there are other things that happen. If you are employed, Then traditionally between now and the end of the year comes all of those programs that you need to reapply for the following year. That might be your health benefits. It might be your 401k or matching funds, all those types of things that one needs to be thinking about for their future. And so if I was a young person again, not that I'm really that old, but if I was a young person again, say 20 years old, and I was just entering into the workforce out of college, and I got myself a, you know, let's say a fairly decent job. And they offered a 401k matching program, or just even if I had a traditional IRA that I wanted to contribute for, here's the realization of it. And I did some calculations just before the show just to get an idea. I went out to Bankrate.com. Bankrate.com has a lot, I don't know how many, but they have a lot of different types of calculators for all kinds of different thoughts that you might have. And I took a traditional IRA. I just said it's just a simple traditional IRA. I have no money to put in it. But over the year, I want to put $5,500 in. That's what I'm going to save. I'm going to put $5,500 in. And I'm going to leave it there for 45 years. I'm just going to continue to contribute to it every year, year after year after year. And when you get to 65, by the calculation that is produced on this particular IRA, and what Bankrate.com has done is they've gone out and taken a look at average rates that you would get for an IRA going through an investment counselor of some sort, you'd have $1.7 million sitting in there for retirement.
Pretty simple. Pretty easy, huh?
Mm-hmm.
So I remember opening up my Roth, I think it was 1997 or 98.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it was real close to, everything is booming. And they're like, it's easy money. You just put it away and it will
yep.
explode. You know, mm-hmm. So I think I put in $3. I expect to be a millionaire by now. No, it wasn't quite like that. But back then, there was such great enthusiasm.
Mm-hmm.
When you invested in something with a .com, and of course we know there were many .com billionaires
oh, yeah.
that were made.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think locally, the owner of the Dallas Mavericks,
mm-hmm.
Indiana University alumni Mark Cuban,
mm-hmm.
had his broadcast.com.
No, it was broadcast.com. That's
mm-hmm.
right. Yahoo bought it, and then they didn't do anything with
didn't
it.
Didn't do
anything.
With it. Mm-hmm. But he made a ton of money.
Mm-hmm.
You think about AOL.
Yep.
AOL that merged and essentially, you know, had the first name on AOL Time Warner.
Mm-hmm.
And I still know a few people that have AOL email accounts.
Mm.
But
yep.
But not many. It's interesting how times have changed.
I still have an AOL account.
Do you?
Yeah, I do.
So back to you being not young. No, I'm just kidding. So
no, I did that as what I call a backdoor, and that is there were times early on in the internet when you got an email account that things would happen and would cause the account to lock up for whatever reason, and you needed another email account to get into. And MSN was one of those that I traditionally use, but what happened is it would lock up for whatever reason in its early days.
Yeah.
And the only way that I could get back into it to reset it was I would go through AOL, and then from AOL gaining access to the internet, I would then be able to go and have a new key sent to me that I could then reopen my account.
There
that's the
go.
Only way, and that's one of the reasons I have it. It's a back door.
Well, whole idea wasn't to go through for me to say, let me remind you of all the great dot-coms that went boom or went bust.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a great time where anybody that had a few dollars to put aside, they were readily encouraged to not just save, but to invest.
Yeah.
And you contrast that with today when there's, even though the stock market really had such a recovery from the recession, and then the last month or so we saw, what was it, as much as 11% erosion from the Dow and the S&P, and it's coming back a little bit, but many will say, oh gosh, it's such a risk to invest. Isn't it better to just put the money aside? Well, you know, there's without risk, there's no reward.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And yes, you could save. And Rick, what is our joke? This is the time, the joke of the day. Here's what savings rates are.
No, they're actually about a tenth of 1% if you look at a regular savings account. If that, you know, some of them are nothing.
Yeah.
And there was, in fact, in Europe, in some countries in Europe, the Eurobank will charge, and this is not for the average consumer, but will charge a bank or a business to put money into their savings account. They will actually charge them an interest. It's a negative interest account.
Yes.
So they don't give the bank a savings interest. They actually charge them to put money in there.
But that's because they're also having a negative rate that they charge for people to borrow money from them.
Mm-hmm.
So and I'm sure there's still a spread where it works financially for them. But
it probably does.
Yeah.
But you know, the interest rate is incredibly small, and so you are right when you were talking about the stock market. You have to look at all the different vehicles for which you can earn dollars. And some of that may mean I'm going to put it into a long-term CD or I'm going to put it into a long-term money market account because it gets me more interest doing that. And I'm young and I won't touch that money.
Yep.
And it does prevent you from touching the money.
Well, there are so many ways that you can save, so many ways you can invest.
Mm-hmm.
The only way to fail, truly, is to choose not to.
Yeah.
And when you say choose not to, it's to choose nothing.
Mm-hmm.
When you don't choose, and you just let time, which truly is time, is one of the key relevant assets to asset building.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just the amount of money you put in to invest, but it's your time to let it grow.
Yeah.
So if you're in your 20s and you say, I don't have to worry about that now, I'd like to spend my money on fun stuff, then you get to your 30s and you don't realize you've wasted a decade of the magic of compounding.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll never get that back. Matter of fact, I mean, you can get back on track, but you'll have to save a lot more of your own hard-earned money to get back in cycle to where you were.
In fact, what I will do while you're talking there is I will change the current age on this. Remember, the IRA calculated at $1.7 million. It was actually $1,708,523.
Wow.
But you started at the age of 20.
Starting at 20, is this going to 65?
Going to 65.
Okay.
I'll change it to 30.
Okay.
And we'll see what happens if I just started at 30. I gave up the first 10 years.
Now, remind me, what were you putting in per year when you were 20?
$5,500.
$5,500.
And I'm still, let's say at 30, I'm still putting in $5,500 a year.
Is it an IRA or a Roth?
This is a traditional IRA.
It's IRA,
Okay. At 65, it's $840,000. I've given up almost $1 million.
By waiting until 30.
Now,
did they have the reverse where if you want to get to 1.7, how much more you'd have to put in?
They may. I'm not looking at it right now, but I can look at it while you're talking.
No, that's
about
okay. I'm just each calculator has different ins and outs.
Yeah.
So by waiting 10 years, you sacrificed
$1 million.
$1 million.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Well, so the reason I spun to this,
mm-hmm.
I didn't just look at my mortgage statement, but I was looking at some of my my quarterly investment statements that come through, and I'm fortunate I have most of my holdings in, I guess, three different places. I've got some stuff with Schwab, and I've got some stuff with Vanguard, and I've got some stuff with One America. And this is based on my past employers of where they've held stuff. So I'm logging in and just seeing, it's like, all right, I can see how little one account has grown, how much another one has gone. Of course, the ones that are active and you're currently plowing money into, paycheck after paycheck, by dollar cost averaging, and buying and holding and never doing anything other than just letting it grow, it's really nice to see those bumps, those bumps upward. But it once again, I don't know how many times a year I do this, and maybe it's less because of the family changes I've gone through, and I don't have my my longtime partner who would count these things with me to do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just looking, and it's like, wow, I've done a decent job for being almost 44
mm-hmm.
of what we've accumulated in retirement accounts. And I say we, but my ex was mostly a stay-at-home mom
mm-hmm.
or kids.
Mm-hmm.
So that was pretty much all on my earnings. It's like, wow, that was it's a nice little sum. Will I be able to retire on it? No.
Mm-hmm.
Especially going through divorce when you do things like you split it up 50-50. There's probably a lesson. By the way, divorce doesn't always pay the way you think it will. But
No, it doesn't.
But seriously, but that's okay because we
mm-hmm.
would have split it together and we split it separately.
Mm-hmm.
But it was impressive, and then it made me think, is it a good number, and I'm just happy to have it where it is,
mm-hmm.
or can I look at opportunities lost and say, how much more would I have had if we'd systematically deposited more dollars there than a summer trip,
mm-hmm.
you know, or dollars toward college 529s, or back in the early days when I was putting more money toward mortgage, you know, and we were paying down a mortgage early.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, all of these are good choices. You'll never have somebody say, what's smarter, put the money down in the mortgage or put it into an IRA or
mm-hmm.
a Roth or a college savings. The answer should always be yes, yes, yes. I don't care what you do. Those are all asset-building strategies, and
mm-hmm.
you won't regret. Could there be one that's more advantageous than another? Yeah, it could be, and
mm-hmm.
it depends on whether it's a good economy or bad. Back in the go-go 90s, the easy thing to do would have paid down early on a mortgage
mm-hmm.
because you were guaranteed to get a much better return by investing in the stock market. It was a virtually guaranteed 20% per year there in the 90s if you were just getting broad exposure to the S&P and
mm-hmm.
the Dow. Today, there's no guarantee of something like that.
Yeah.
And depending on your interest rate, so here I am, my mortgage is at 4.8%. And I'd say, well, if I was paying down on the mortgage extra, I'm saving or I'm earning 4.8%.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what would you be getting by investing? Well, you never know. Last year it may have been 25%, and this year maybe a loss of 11%.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't know.
Yep.
But in general, historically, you'd say none of those are bad choices. Notice I didn't say, or is it putting it
mm-hmm.
into a variable annuity,
mm-hmm.
or is it? I'm going to buy real estate in Zimbabwe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Was it? A friend of mine has a guaranteed 25% return. No, there's
mm-hmm.
no instant bombs here. It's also no just take a trip. Let's go shopping. Let's update the house, not with repairs, but let's just refurnish. Which are things that are not necessarily investments. They may be an investment in your lifestyle, but not a true investment where your money's going to grow over time.
Mm-hmm.
When you put yourself in a position not to fail, when you say,
yep.
all these are good choices, you can pretty much do it without regret.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's a great time to plan. I did a calculation a little bit earlier. I wrote it down on the paper. I was trying to find the same calculator a moment ago, and I can't find the path that I went down to find that calculator. But what I said was that I wanted to have $1 million at retirement age, say 65, and I only have $1,000 now. If I invest $1,000 now and I want $1 million in 45 years, this was when I started out, say, at 20, what kind of interest rate products am I going to have to look at in order to reach $1 million? So I was taking a look at what kind of interest rates am I looking for. And what the calculator came back and said was, first, you're going to have to put in about $700 a month. So you have to figure that every month you're going to have to be putting in about $700. Plus, you're going to have to find initially interest rates of about 2.5%. So we know you're not going to have a regular savings account.
Mm-hmm.
You might be able to find a long-term money market, 3 to 5 year money market, or a CD or something like that might pay 2.5. But you're going to have to look around for something that will get you 2.5. And then at the end of 5 years, you're going to have to find something that then goes to 3.5. At the end of at about year 10, you're going to have something about 4.75.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, when you reach year 15, you're going to have to be somewhere that the investment is returning 6.5%.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to be able to plan that out. I mean, all of a sudden, I know, you know, to reach that number, starting with 1,000 to reach 1,000,000, those are pretty high interest rates in today's market, that I would have to find some types of vehicles that give me that type of return.
Right. So, and I'm looking on your sheet from 2.5 to 3.5 to 4.75
to 6.5.
6.5. So, wow. And you know, maybe we'll get to a point here in the next few years where stock market is back to a go-go growth. And people will feel good, 15% to 20%, which is an annualized return, which is not unheard of for periods of time.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's, you know, you might take a look that I'm going to put some in a savings account, I'm going to put some in an IRA, and maybe I accumulate enough over the first 5 or 10 years or something of that nature that I'll buy some real estate, just land.
Yep.
Just land. And I'll just let that sit for a period of time. If it's in the right spot, it can be a small fortune. I was doing some calculations last night on some things, trying to figure out there's a very large chunk of land, not one that I'm interested in, but what would it cost to put a house on a particular type of lot located in a certain section of town. That lot right now, or that hunk of land, is going for $30 a square foot. To have
$30
a square foot. So if you were to look at just the dirt, without even getting in there and tilling it out and building a home and doing all of the things that, you know, the plumbing and the water lines and all that stuff that has to go in there, for a quarter acre piece of land, you're going to spend $320,000 just for the dirt.
Wow. Sounds like Plano, west of the tollway.
It is, in fact. And the interesting thing of it is that, you know, when I was talking with the landowner about it, because he was describing to me how much he's selling the land for, and he's been on there since I think the land was invented. To be candid, his family has been for that long period of time. Basically, they bought the land for about 25 cents, you know, square foot. So, I mean, it's an astronomical climb, but that's over a very long period of time. So if you can find investments in real estate, some of them aren't bad, but you really, really, really need to know your stuff and need to dig out through really all of the things about whatever you're buying into, whether it's a retail center or what.
So for those of you looking for the next big booming suburb of Dallas, it's called Oklahoma.
We're annexing that.
There you go. That will be part of Collin County before you know it. So, I love hearing things like this. For those that don't know, Rick is not just our grand poobah of the show from Cornerstone Craig Union League, but he also happens to be a public servant in
the city
of Plano on the city council, and you have a great perspective. Not just from a consumer standpoint, but then from a business and economic development standpoint as well, and seeing that it's great for the development of Plano, but there's also an individual owner of land who made an extraordinary choice. In this case, going from 25 cents per square foot to $30. That's times, not 120%, 120 times. Yeah, that's how you make millionaires, or in some cases, billionaires. So, not bad, not bad at all. And it's interesting to say, well, you've got to be really wealthy to do it. Well, a quarter square foot, you don't have to necessarily be wealthy to accumulate land. And it's hit and miss. You may not know where the next big area, the next big highway, and the area of growth is going to be.
You're absolutely correct. You live in the beautiful city of Frisco, and in the 1980s, I was looking in Frisco as a possibility of building a home, and I could have bought lots up there, relatively inexpensive, because nobody knew, nobody thought that the growth was going to go beyond 121 North. And so Frisco land was really inexpensive at that point in time.
Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, I think it was 1995, and the Cowboys are just finishing up with three Super Bowls in 5 years or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody said to Jerry Jones, they said, why don't you think about putting your world headquarters in Frisco, Texas? He goes, yeah, and maybe we won't have a Super Bowl in the next 20 years either. Well, it's amazing that things that you would never expect.
Yeah.
And seriously, in this case, nobody would have foreseen the growth of Frisco outside of the city planners and developers. But so much has to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You can have the best laid plans. That doesn't mean that you'll have business come. It doesn't mean that you'll have homeowners move there. It doesn't mean you'll have the tax base. Nobody would have projected a recession and think, what does this mean to the growth?
Mm-hmm.
In any of those areas. So we're very fortunate living in North Texas that we were relatively sheltered from a lot of the impact, both personal as well as from a business standpoint, the economic development. A lot of cities stopped. They completely stopped building and they stopped growing.
They did.
And yet, here in North Texas, we were one of the fortunate areas that people still found very desirable, very attractive. They want to move their businesses. They want to move their families there. So because of that, it's raised the tide for all business owners, homeowners, investors. So good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But,
and so for an individual who I'm just thinking about, say, just me or somebody that just an individual that's sitting out there with a few dollars. If you're 20 years old, start putting it away in a 401k if your employer offers it. If not, go and get some form of retirement program going at your local credit union. Maybe it's a traditional IRA or a Roth IRA or something. And put some dollars into it and begin accumulating dollars that way. And the other thing that, I would always advise somebody is, as you are growing in income and you have more disposable income, don't think that really what you need to do is have a 96-inch plasma television set or whatever it might be. Think about what you can do with the dollars in other ways. So maybe you're not really, a really shrewd investor, and this is what I did while I was in college. We weren't shrewd investors. We were dummies, basically. Our biggest investment was we had $10. We went down to the pub and got a sandwich and a bunch of beers, and that was our investment. But we went to a local stockbroker, talked to them, and he said, why don't you start an investment club? And 10 of you get together, and each month you throw in $20, and you have $200 every month, and then you pick some stocks, and I'll buy and sell the stocks for you. But that way you have enough money that, at that time, it draws enough interest for a broker to do the deal.
Mm-hmm.
So you can buy 10 shares of stock at $20. You have to cover the costs of the broker doing that transaction, but you get 10 shares of stock. And you begin to accumulate wealth that way. It might be what we formed was a small partnership. And one of the fraternity members who was in it was studying law. So he decided, let's form a limited liability corporation around it. So we did. And eventually at the end, we had an end date, which was 5 years down the line. We just sell it all and divide up the earnings. But that was the philosophy of it. We learned a lot about the stock market doing that. And it was just a bunch of guys sitting around having a couple of beers, throwing $20 in, and then during the month, one or two people went out, did some investigation of some inexpensive stocks, of which something might give them a fairly decent return, and then using a broker to place the deals.
It was funny. I was reading, I don't know if this was Forbes. It's hard nowadays. There's so many sites online that you go from CNN, and they'll take you to a story here, and you're like, where am I at? But anyway, they were talking about Chipotle last year was the big winner as far as retail chains, as far as stock growth.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were an investor, not saying who sold the most burgers or tacos or whatever, but if you're looking at who grew the fastest, last year was Chipotle. And they were said, if you were looking to invest in fast food chains, restaurants, where they predict the big growers would be this year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's no different from what you did back then. Sometimes it's a matter of research and what you think, what is underserved areas in the market or in your community, but the community may be the U.S., a community could be the world. You know, some of these are national, some of these are international companies. Sometimes the research is just going out and eating or shopping and saying, oh, I like this, and I think a lot of people are like me, and if I like this, other people are going to like this, and maybe this is not just a good place to eat at, but it's a good place to invest.
Yep.
You do the same thing if you're shopping, and you think of what are your favorite stores to go to, and it may be that you're a department store person, and you say, you know, I always used to go to this department store, but it seems like when I go now, there's a lot fewer people there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just one of the realities of some department stores that they're facing. But then you go into the mall and you see a small specialty store, and it's always really busy in there.
Mm-hmm.
And you think it's a much smaller overhead to run a tiny store. And maybe because they're small, they've also got a very unique and specific sort of merchandising. But maybe it's unique and it's something you can't get anywhere else. And that uniqueness is cool. And suddenly you're a darling. And just taking into account things like this can make you a smart investor.
Yep. And there are things, again, it takes a little bit to investigate. But if you say you have a yearning at some point in time to do real estate investment, I would look at some of the smaller firms that have small real estate investment trusts, REITs, because you don't have to put in a whole lot of money. And it's being brokered by an individual that really does understand the real estate market. And by working with that individual, you'll learn a lot. And just talking with them as to, well, why did we invest in that area, or why do we have – there was one in my block when my first home was a duplex. And so for two-thirds of the block, they were single-family detached homes until you got down to my corner and it swung around the other way. And those were duplexes going down that street. Almost all the duplexes were owned by a real estate investment trust by a bunch of doctors that got together, hired a real estate guy, and bought one after another and used them as rental properties. Now, I don't always encourage rental properties from the standpoint of it. I don't have any care in the home. I don't have any skin in the game. I'm paying my rent. I expect that the owner is going to do the painting and everything else. So the upkeep has to be done by somebody else. So if it's not done, the property can fall apart. But it proved to be a very good investment for the people that were investing, and they didn't invest a whole lot of money. It was 10 doctors that got together and pooled a little bit. Now, obviously, they're making a little bit more than I am, but they pooled a little bit and bought a duplex, and then they leased both sides. Did some management company to take care of it, so they cut the lawns and did all of that type of stuff, and then earned enough to buy the next duplex when it went up for sale, and then the next one. Before they knew it, they owned the entire block.
Wow.
And they put it into a real estate investment trust only for the sole purpose of that was their retirement plan.
By the way, this whole concept of research, I want people to think there's so many different ways that you are an expert. You know more than you think you know. You could be spending hours at night online. I don't mean online doing research.
Yep.
I mean you could just be spending hours at your favorite content sites. And if it seems like a lot of people are on those sites, maybe those are the sites that are the next big investments. Now, this is not investment advice, by the way. This is just an example. I think there's a commercial. It's cars.com. And it's making fun of a dot-com sort of an IPO Cresser, and they said, our new app, our site does things that nobody does.
Mm-hmm.
And they start talking about it, and then somebody stands up and they said, is that like Cars.com does? And they said, no, we do this. They said, oh, like Cars.com. And then at the end of the commercial, the guy turns around in his right hand person goes, oops, I think I missed that one. And they said, cancel the IPO. It's an ever-changing marketplace,
mm-hmm.
and B, simply doing your research.
Mm-hmm.
So you may have a place where you do blogging at night or you like reading, and it feels like a small community. It's 500 or 1,000 users, and you're like, all right, this is just a little mm-hmm. small place to hang out. You may also go to a place you think, wow, this looks like it had 500,000 hits or likes. Like, all right, that's got a stream of people. Well, this is a growing entity. And you say, well, what does this matter? What matters is that online content and content producers, they're going to be tomorrow's NBC, ABC, mm-hmm. CBS, Fox. When you think about entertainment delivery, I think that's the biggest threat right
yep.
now is how many people are just going to be putting mm-hmm. all their stuff online.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be that years later, the winners will be the YouTubes and the Googles and the Yahoos,
mm-hmm.
Could be the 21st century, the networks
mm-hmm.
would be. And you see places like Netflix and Hulu and others are saying, we're going to be your delivery sources. I'd be terrified if I was somebody that was a traditional cable provider right
mm-hmm.
now.
I mean, who would have thought it, say, 10 years ago? Even just 10 years ago, that companies like HBO and Netflix would be winning most of the Emmys
yep.
At the Emmy Awards. If it wasn't produced or on CBS, ABC, NBC, you figured or PBS, if you figured that was the only venue.
Yep.
And now most of them go away to HBO, mm-hmm. Netflix, and a few others.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny. I didn't stick around to watch them. I watched two football games on that station. I had to change sooner or later,
mm-hmm.
but I saw all the ads all day.
Mm-hmm.
Stay tuned for the Emmys. But I like reading the recap. But in past years, one of the bad jokes about Emmys is say, and you're watching this on a network, and none of our shows are nominated. You know, and it's like, isn't that ironic that the Emmys are on
yep.
a station that is highly irrelevant when it comes to the award shows anymore?
Mm-hmm.
It would be no different than you go back into the 70s and the big three. It was not even a big four then.
That's
Fox
right.
Fox didn't exist. So the big three thinking, oh, yeah, our threat is going to be local stations. We'll be cable stations, and there'll be local access, and that they're going to get enough power that they're going to be broadcasting on a national basis,
mm-hmm.
and that they'll have just as much of a carriage or a footprint as one of the,
mm-hmm.
the three. And, of
mm-hmm.
course, then was the advent of cable and the rise of channels like ESPN or
mm-hmm.
and HBO or TBS. And of course, how incredibly popular and powerful they are.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got that, and now you've got music producers, I'm sure, who have thought, yeah, you know what we're really worried about is that people stop buying records or tapes or CDs because they'll be buying it on a computer.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. And they're probably thinking, yeah, they'll go to Amazon, and then 2 weeks later they'll have the disc. Well, why wouldn't they just want to buy it now from our store?
Mm-hmm.
Not ever thinking digital content. What
yeah.
does that even
yeah.
mean?
Yeah, how many record stores do people see? I mean, and for those that are really young, a record store was a place you went in and bought vinyl. I mean, that's what it was. And you went in and you flipped through the racks and found your favorite artist and you went and paid him a couple of dollars for an album or a small 45. But
Tower Records.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and now, you know, artists put songs out on iTunes and various other locations, and you download them, and frankly, there's no distribution for them. They don't have to pay a percentage to the record store. They don't have to pay all the costs of producing vinyl. All they're doing is paying studio time. That's all they're doing.
Whatever Apple's you know, access point is.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is.
I don't know what that is either.
But it's so funny. So I use all these as examples because we are such a quick evolving technology focused society right now. If you are smart, figure out, somebody is going to know what the next big thing is. Somebody will be developing that right now. But when you think about how ever changing, I used to work at Blockbuster Video, and that was a couple cities ago. But I didn't know when I worked there that they were based out of Dallas, or where were they headquartered at?
They were based out of Dallas.
Was it Dallas? And of course you'd never think, well, what could be better than renting videos? Well, I guess streaming them at home or on the road or onto your phone or your tablet or so that was a business model, that renting videos was going to be the category killer for movie theaters for a while, and then and then it became a competition for broadcasters, and then it went the way of the dodo bird. It became obsolete, and there was and they did not have the foresight to think what's next, that we are next. And something else was next. Well, if you think about the things that you enjoy, and here I've used a bunch of examples that are all entertainment-focused. We've talked about movies and TV, but music, all these things are consumed. Nobody, I think, would have thought about gaming the way that they do today.
No.
I still have my original Nintendo.
Do you?
That I had in college. And yes, so that was an old gen even back then. Some people like to play on an Atari or a Sega Genesis, but I have my first version Nintendo. It's very, very dusty, and I've got the old cartridges. Just as it's kind of a relic of the past. And nowadays, you've still got two major category killers platforms, and Xbox and PlayStation. P4 and the Xbox One. You've even seen the Wii kind of go away. They stopped producing, manufacturing games because they went to their handheld consoles. But guess what? They're all competing with your phones and your tablets as the device to put games
on. And my daughter is a gamer, and I've been absolutely amazed as where games have gone, because I know that when she was very young, I bought her a Nintendo.
Really?
It had Mario on it, and it had a program called Paint, so that she could draw and paint using the computer, and she would spend hours on it. Now she spends hours on it, but what she's doing is wearing a headset and a microphone, and has a couple of consoles that are sitting in front of her, and she is teaming up with people all around the world to play this game.
Rick's daughter, by the way, her daytime job is modeling, and her nighttime job is she's a virtual assassin.
She is. Really, if you look at it, that's exactly correct. I told her that when, if they come out with Matrix 4 or Kill Bill 4, she should try out.
There you go. So, anyway... If this seems like it's a fun trip down memory lane, there's lessons to be learned. Because some people were investors in these old companies. And by the way, Blockbuster was a stock darling for a while.
It was. Absolutely. Here's one that I blew.
Okay.
And this is just to go to show you that even the people that work within an industry can be absolutely stupid. In the early 1980s, I am working for a highly digitized company called Electronic Data Systems, or EDS. And we're dealing with technology every single day. Along comes the personal computer at that time, because personal computers in the early 80s really didn't exist. I mean, they were in their raw infant forms. And along comes a company that says, I'm going to provide an operating system for all of these computers. And that... individual that was developing it was the name Bill Gates, and Paul Allen at that time. So Bill Gates and Paul Allen, and we talked with them from an EDS standpoint about powering the IBM personal computer and what it can do as far as using a basic language, and that's what it was called, basic language to power this piece of equipment. In that, since he was producing it all, and we were putting, EDS was putting a little bit of dollars in there just to help them front some of the development on BASIC, the conversation came up that they ought to do an IPO. me being absolutely stupid, look at it and go, oh, pff, you know, it's never going to amount to much. So I pass on it.
Mm-hmm.
I pass on it. I decide I'm not going to put – some of the other guys in the office put money into it and arranged so that when the IPO was released, they would get the early on stock. I passed on the deal. And decided I wasn't going to put money into it to help fund the IPO. Stupid move.
You know, we all have opportunities like that.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody could say, well, gee, I knew that this company was going to be big. You actually got to talk to and meet Bill Gates.
Yeah, when he was very young, and when he came out, and of course he didn't quite fit the EDS mold. We're all sitting there, you know, clean shaven, short haircuts, in blue suits, black tie, and white shirts, and he comes out and he's got his shirt untucked, untucked, unbuttoned, sandals, and long hair, round glasses, and is talking with us. But, you know, you could tell right away that he knew his stuff. And you know, the guy was a genius as to what was going on. And, of course, his mother was a lawyer with IBM, which helped. I mean, it gave him a little bit of an insight as to what was going on.
Well, if you look at those lessons in the past, it can help inform you.
Mm-hmm.
If you are looking to say maybe your goals for 2016 and mm-hmm. beyond, you're like, how do I get to that one point $7 million that Rick talked about
mm-hmm.
early in the show, and you don't have 45 years, but you think,
mm-hmm.
and this is not about how do I gamble or how do I invest in reckless things and become penny stock.
Mm-hmm.
It's just saying, how do you use the insights of what you know and say some things will grow, some things will soar, and some things will fall. Some things will become obsolete.
Yeah.
And just using your basic knowledge, it is like it's like the movie The Matrix. Sometimes
mm-hmm.
you don't have your mind cluttered up, and you can see clearly
mm-hmm.
this is going to go places.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the kind of thing you want to invest in. You'd rather buy low, sell high. The whole idea is buy when something is starting out and it's still catching on
mm-hmm.
before it's gone mainstream. And that's just general, you know, 101 from an investing standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
What was it? There was another commercial on TV recently. It must not have been a very good ad because I can't remember who the ad's for.
Mm-hmm.
But it was somebody they were walking around and they were seeing a shoe. It was probably a Croc-like shoe. I don't think it was Crocs.
Mm-hmm.
But they noticed, they said, wow, I saw a bunch of these. And they said they didn't go out and buy Crocs or the,
mm-hmm.
the like. Look, like they went and investigated who's the manufacturer of these. I want to invest in them.
Mm.
And the concept
mm-hmm.
was very simple, and yet it was a great ad. And it was
mm-hmm.
like, invest in what you know or invest in what you see.
Mm-hmm.
And this is somebody said, I see a trend. I see growth potential here.
Yeah.
And you could do the exact same thing. So
mm-hmm. I mean, you can even look at simple things. And this is a, you know, a simple example. Who thought of having a of taking little birds and putting them in a slingshot and throwing them at pigs. And when the iPhone came out...
Michael Vick may have thought about that, but he got it in a couple
days. Yeah, he did. You're absolutely correct. Yeah. But, I mean, it was a simple little game that these guys thought of when the iPhone came out. And we'll put this out on the iTunes library, and we'll charge somebody 99 cents to get this game. But all of a sudden, it is, you know, the Angry Birds becomes a super game overnight because it's a simple idea and it's fun to play.
And I'm looking
mm-hmm.
right now on this phone. I only have three versions of it. On my iPad, I think I have five. In fact, I'm almost astonished that I have less than
mm-hmm.
that. But so you've got Angry Birds Seasons, Angry Birds, Angry Birds Rio.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have my Star Wars Angry Birds or my Angry Birds
mm-hmm.
2. That's on the other
device. And you know, I used to have that, and I stopped playing Angry Birds for one reason and one reason only.
Oh, yeah.
And that is because I began to notice as I was playing Angry Birds that I would burn up 2 to 3 hours in a sitting.
Hmm.
And I'm going, you know, there's a lot of other things I could have done for 2 to 3 hours than sitting here playing Angry Birds. Yeah, was it fun? It was absolutely a blast. But, yeah, but there's the problem of it, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, a whole evening has been wasted playing Angry Birds.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you how many times I played that song over and over again in my head. Oh my God!
It's like the Mario song.
It really is.
Yeah.
It really is. So this has been a fun way of looking that investing and saving does not have to be complicated.
It doesn't. No.
You talked about doing this in college. Many kids will start out doing the stock market game in middle school or high school, and generally they're encouraged to invest in what you know, and they'll say, today it'd be Apple, it may be Disney,
the Mars Candy Company.
It could be Kellogg, it could be McDonald's, it could be Hasbro or Mattel, toy producers. It could be Abercrombie and Fitch and saying, we want you to do research on the brands that you shop, the brands that you own. And it's such a valuable resource of saying, I'm understanding a little bit about the corporations that produce the things that I like, that I spend money on, that I value. So, So, and if you're a parent or a grandparent and you want to teach money to kids, I think, Rick, you said you learn more from stocks from your investment club than anything.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, because we had an opportunity to talk with each other about things, bounce ideas off of each other. It wasn't, as we were trying to fish around for ideas when we first formed the club, one of the ideas was, well, Rick, you like to go to the movies all the time. Why don't you investigate something about movies? And my first thought was looking into the movie theaters. Then I realized maybe that wasn't the way to go, and there was a little company called Warner Communications. It was actually called Warner Brothers at the time. And Warner Brothers owned the cinematography cameras that everybody made movies with. They owned the patent on the Panavision cameras. And so anybody that wanted to make a movie had to lease them from Warner Brothers to make a movie, to get a Panavision camera in. And so we bought Warner Brothers. Then it became Warner Communications. Then it became Time Warner. Then it became AOL Time Warner, and on and on. So we did very well with that one stock. Another one decided that they would take a look at what we were used to at the time, Budweiser. And they invested in Budweiser. Now, we did pull some money together, buy some stocks of Budweiser, but along came a lot of the what I would call different beers, European imports and everything else. And Bud had a hard time there for a period of time. We didn't do as well on that stock.
And that's when you went back to investing in Budweiser the old-fashioned way.
We decided by buying cases. And we thought the only way to get the stock price up is to go buy another case.
Oh, God. That is another type of investment, I'm sure.
After a few cases, we made some really sensible decisions.
They made some good decisions. Hopefully it's not just been entertained, but there's some good money lessons we had today. Maybe this is the week or the month that you want to check out things like your mortgage balance.
Yeah.
Check out things like your investment portfolio, where they are, and maybe this is the week that you either go visit at your credit union, and you talk to an investment advisor, or you talk to savings, or and maybe at the time you talk to somebody at a credit counseling agency like Navicore Solutions, you say, how do I find money that I can put toward my investing or my savings?
Yeah.
So you know what? Hopefully we've engaged you in a way. Take some steps. Do something with it this week. And we want to see you achieve all of your financial goals. I would like to earn the $1.7 million that we talked about.
Yeah, I would too.
I would love to be rich like that, but I may have a few years to catch up. You may as well. Don't give up on that.
Yeah, don't. And so thanks, everyone, for joining us on Your Money, Your Matters, brought to you by Cornerstone Credit Union League and Navicore Solutions. And for Todd, Mark, and myself, Rick Grady, we hope that you have an absolutely pleasant and wonderful Tuesday, a great week, and we will talk to you again in 1 week on Your Money, Your Matters. Time to be fooling around.